This week on Behind the Lens, New Orleans City Council passes the budget for 2020. Michael Isaac Stein has the details. And NOLA Public Schools Superintendent Henderson Lewis recommends that charters for Mary D. Coghill and Joseph A. Craig not be renewed. Marta Jusen has the latest. Also, Lens editor Charles Maldonado sat down for an extensive interview with former New Orleans Inspector General Ed Quattrovo. We'll feature their conversation about the Sewerage and Water Board's lead inspections. I'm Jessica Rosegard. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
New Orleans City Council passed the 2020 budget, fully funding Mayor LaToya Cantrell's key objectives and slightly lowering the city's overall property tax rate. Lens reporter Michael Isaac Stein is here with more. So, Michael, the City Council passed a budget. Are there any surprises in the 2020 budget?
It more or less looks like the version that Mayor LaToya Cantrell had originally proposed in October. So not any huge surprises. There were some changes made from the mayor's original version. One big one is that they increased funding for early childhood education. It had originally been budgeted for $1.5 million. They increased that to $3 million, which is a pretty big deal because there's a state match on those dollars. So by increasing the budget by $1.5 million, the city is netting $3 million extra dollars for that cause. So that was probably the biggest change. There's also more funding for the district attorney. We had on a previous podcast talked about that the DA was asking for more money to get more prosecutors and service providers in juvenile court, as well as raises for assistant district attorneys to stop the rapid pace of turnover. The other interesting thing, the city for the first time is tapping into $6 million that Entergy has paid in fines this year. Once for the astroturfing scandal where actors were paid to go to city council meetings. The second was a $1 million fine for Entergy's inaction in solving the problem of frequent power outages in the city. So they took about $800,000 of that. And it's only interesting because there's been debates throughout the year of how this money should be used. Mayor Cantrell had talked about all of the money going to the Sewerage and Water Board. The council had argued that maybe some should go to the Sewerage and Water Board, but some of the money should also go to council priorities, smaller budget line items. And so that's what you see in the $800,000. It's a lot of smaller, not huge programming, but things such as new decibel readers for the health department, things of that sort. So those were some of the changes that we saw in the budget.
And I've asked you about that Entergy money before, where that was going to go and what they were going to decide to do with some of the money from these fines. So there's still $5 million in Entergy fines. Is it just sitting in an account and just accessible for when the city council decides?
Yeah, I think there were two reasons why there hasn't been a lot of movement on that money. The first is because there's been disagreements over how it should be spent and how much should go to the Sewerage and Water Board. The second is that the power plant is in the middle of litigation. So a district court judge ruled that the council's vote to approve the power plant was invalid and ordered them to redo the vote. Now that's being appealed currently. But if the plant is ultimately rejected by the courts, the council, suspects that Entergy might want to get this $5 million back. So that was another reason they were holding off, just to make sure that, the power plant was actually built and the city would actually have that $5 million before spending it.
Thanks for clarifying that. Back to the budget. The biggest conversation was what to do about property taxes. The city council settled on a partial roll forward. The initial conversation about the potential for a partial roll forward was across the board cuts, but that's not what actually happened.
Right. And so to give some context here, it all started in the summer. We're in a quadrennial reassessment year, which means that our assessor is required to go around and revalue all the property in New Orleans. And this year's was a pretty impactful one. A lot of people, tens of thousands of people saw their property values jump by 50% or even more. Some saw their values double or triple or quadruple, which obviously that means that you have to pay more in property taxes. So it had a lot of people scrambling to figure out how they were going to find this extra property taxes. So In a quadrennial reassessment year, the council has to, all taxing authorities have to, what's called, roll back the rates. So that's basically reducing the property tax rate to a level that would keep revenue consistent with last year. So basically, you know, lowering the tax rate to account for that increase in property values that we saw this year. Then they have a decision to make. They can keep the rates low, or they can roll forward back to the rates, the original rates that we had this year. The council had argued that we should keep the rolled back rates, lower the rates to ease the burden on residents who were seeing these huge reassessment jumps. The mayor had argued that the tax rate should be rolled forward to the current rate or decreased to a lesser degree in order for the city to fund critical services. So we ended up with a partial rollback. So neither all the way rolled back or all the way rolled forward. And the way they did it, they were selective. So there's in the entire property tax rates, there's a lot of individual what's called millages that go to different things. You know, some goes to the general fund, some goes to specific funds to be used for capital improvements or drainage and whatever it might be. So the solution was that the millages for public safety, so for the police, for the fire department, and for infrastructure, so all the millages for the sewage and water board, for example, were kept at their 2019 rates. Meanwhile, rates on other you know, city services were cut significantly. So the library saw a big cut. So did the Audubon Institute. And the Audubon Institute cut is actually pretty interesting. They cut the Audubon Institute's millage by 1.95. And that happens to be the exact amount that the Audubon Institute will gain in 2021. If you remember, earlier this year, we approved a new millage for the Parks Department, City Park, and Audubon. And it was one big package, but within that, Audubon was going to benefit with 1.95 millages. Now, that basically has been erased with the way that the property tax was set this year. So that was one interesting piece.
And when you say that, you know, the library was cut, you mean that their millage was cut, not necessarily that the dollar amount that they end up with is being cut. The millage was dropped down so that the funding remains the same.
Yeah, although with the library, I think the cut was significant enough that I would assume that the funding would reduce there. I'm not sure if the property tax assessment from this year would make up for the size of the cut to the library. I mean, the math on it is a little complicated, but you're right that a cut to the millage rate does not necessarily mean less revenue because, again, you know, the property in New Orleans is now valued much higher. So property taxes all around are higher. You know, I think you'd need an accountant to tell you exactly what's going to happen to the library's bottom line. But it was a pretty significant cut.
So based on all of this math between roll forward, roll back, millages, all of that, what is the bottom line impact on people's property taxes going to be?
Again, it's going to depend. So, you know, let's just say you were a property that saw your property value stayed the same from 2019 to 2020. In that situation, you'll see your property taxes go down because the property tax rate has been reduced. If you're one of these, you know, properties that saw their value double, your taxes are still going to go up. It's just going to be to a lesser degree than if the property tax rate had been held even from 2019. So again, it's going to depend from property to property, and you know some properties saw their value lowered, you know, this year. I mean, that was rare, but you know, it does happen, and so those people will definitely see a reduction in their property taxes.
So overall, the worst case scenario that people saw when they got their reassessment and everybody kind of panicked, they should take another look at their property taxes and what this decision by the city council, what kind of impact it has. Switching gears somewhat, New Orleans Tourism and Marketing is going to merge with New Orleans and Company on January 1st of 2020. The city council was concerned about this merger. Tell me a bit about the merger and why the council was concerned.
So these two organizations, both the New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Corporation and New Orleans and Company, which used to be known as the Convention and Visitors Bureau, they both have a similar mission, which is basically to market the city to tourists, both nationally and abroad. And the idea here is that they want to get that mission under one umbrella. But the concern basically comes from the fact that the NOTMC is a public body. It has a publicly appointed board. The mayor has control over a lot of those seats, and there's other seats that are reserved for council members. And they also have at least six public meetings every year. New Orleans & Company, on the other hand, is a private nonprofit. Their board is internally appointed, and they have no public meetings. And in that context, you see, you know, I think roughly $8 million of public funding going from a public body to a private one. So that's the gist of the concern. More specifically, you know, council member Kristen Palmer in particular is basically worried about the public's voice in how the city is marketed when it comes to tourism and whether, you know, bartenders and musicians and people that might not be, you know, part of New Orleans & Company will have a say in you know, how we proceed with our tourism marketing. And in particular, you know, she points out that there's kind of been this blueprint for how New Orleans tourism should progress. It was this study produced in 2007, 2008. And at that point in the city's history, obviously it's post-Katrina, the economy was lagging, there weren't a ton of visitors. And so, you know, the blueprint back then was, let's just get as many visitors as possible. Let's, you know, get as much outside money in to stimulate the economy. You know, we're now faced with a pretty different situation. You know, we have millions upon millions of visitors every year. And so Councilmember Palmer has talked a lot about this idea of over-tourism and sustainable tourism and making sure that, you know, when you're planning your tourism economy, you're also thinking about the negative effects that it can have on residents and keeping that in mind. So her big thing has been that the city needs a sustainable tourism plan. And she doesn't, you know, want that to be controlled by New Orleans & Company because, again, the public doesn't have as much of a say there. There is no public board and there are no public meetings.
And to that point, the council passed a resolution addressing some of these concerns. What does the resolution say?
So the resolution calls on New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Corporation to set aside a certain portion of its remaining budget. It still will have a small budget. Most of the funding is going to go to New Orleans & Company, but it will retain a little bit of money. And the resolution basically calls for NOTMC to set aside a certain part of that remaining money to create a sustainable tourism plan. And there are some specifics there about making sure, you know, that all the stakeholders are at the table and really taking, you know, that New Orleans & Company should be at the table, but that the process should be controlled by NOTMC because, again, they are a public body. It's not binding. It's more urging, you know, than demanding. But it seems likely that that's what will happen. Mark Romig, who was, you know, leading NOTMC, is now moving to New Orleans & Co. He's usually pretty responsive when it comes to council requests. So, you know, we'll see how this progresses next year.
Great. And we know you'll continue to keep an eye on it. Thank you so much, Mike Lazakstein, for your reporting.
Thank you.
NOLA Public Schools Superintendent Henderson Lewis has issued his recommendation that two charters for Mary D. Coghill and Joseph A. Craig not be renewed in light of failing grades in their state assessment. Lens Education reporter Marta Jusen joins me with more. So, Marta, two charters were recommended to not be renewed due to failing grades in the recent state assessment, Mary D. Coghill and Joseph A. Craig. Remind us of the process when it comes to recommending that a charter not be renewed. What happens there?
Sure. So when a charter gets to the end of its contract or its final year, the district does an evaluation. They evaluate academics, financial status, and then kind of, operations at the school. And so what happened with both of these schools, Coghill and Craig, they have not done well in the academic department, and they each got an F this year, which is basically a guarantee of not seeing your charter renewed. And so after they gather all that information and evaluate everything, they decide whether or not they're going to renew the charter. And then Superintendent Lewis, after he gets that information from his administrative team, they go ahead and make their recommendation. And once Lewis makes a recommendation to the board, his recommendation will essentially stand unless the board wants to veto him, and they can do that with 5 votes out of their 7-member board. But that veto process is not automatically on the agenda. And so since these renewals are delivered as part of the superintendent's report and not an action item, there's not actually an opportunity for the public to comment on the superintendent's recommendations.
And this process is a change from past practices when it came to renewing or not renewing charters.
Right. So in the past, before Act 91, which is the law that brought all the recovery school district charters back under Orleans Parish control, in the past, the Orleans Parish School Board would vote on every single charter individually. So you can imagine those were often very passionate meetings because, you know, the public actually had the opportunity to weigh in at those meetings about what the decisions the board was going to be making.
And so now the only input the board really has is in this veto process. It's that Superintendent Henderson Lewis says, this is what I recommend, and the board then has the option with a vote of 5 out of the 7 members, like you mentioned, to just deny his recommendation.
Correct.
And so at a Thursday night school board meeting, you know, you mentioned that the public used to have a say in the process when it was up to the school board, but it seems like the public tried to have some input in this situation at the school board meeting on Thursday. What happened?
Right. So the public showed up big. There were dozens of people from Coghill there wearing purple and gold shirts. Those are the school's colors. There were students and families and staff. There were also a lot of people from Craig. The place was packed. It was standing room only. And I think, you know, people were very frustrated that there was no formal capacity for them to comment on this decision. So there was one or two parts during the meetings where the group started chanting. One of them was "Not today, not us," I think, meaning that they didn't want to see their charters officially not renewed at this meeting. And they did eventually, the board agreed to hear from two people, one from representing each group. Eventually, the principal of Coghill was allowed to make comments, and a representative from Craig was allowed to make comments. But, you know, that's certainly much less of a public voice than we would have expected based on the number of people who were there. And after the Coghill principal urged the board to reconsider their decision, Coghill students lined the front of the boardroom, coming like feet away from the board members, and then they did their school's chant. And so that was a pretty powerful moment.
Did you get a sense of why parents and students want these schools to remain open under current leadership if the schools are failing?
Yeah, I think parents and students and community members just have really close ties to these governing boards. It's interesting because part of the charter movement was a thought that you could have these really community-based and like neighborhood-rich school boards that would run successful schools. In this case, we have two schools with failing grades, and that's certainly a concern. I think there's kind of the other side of looking at things where people are like, look, these are these local boards that, you know, people really encouraged and wanted to have. So do we shut them down automatically, or do we kind of come in and try to help them? I think as of lately, I think that's been more of the discussion because, you know, your other alternative or the extreme alternative is that we have charter management organizations running all the schools in the city. There's, of course, several single charter boards that are running successful schools in the city. But I think this is unique in that these are two community-run boards that took over failing recovery school district schools. And, you know, now the time has come. And do you shutter them or do you support them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty complicated. And regardless, though, last time we spoke about this, the general thinking is that these schools, these actual buildings, will remain open as schools, but probably under new leadership. It's these parents and students are not likely to lose the school location that they've chosen.
Right. So the district has hinted at that in a few different ways. They basically told parents that they would likely be selecting new groups. They haven't gotten too far into the details on that. And then also at the meeting this week, Superintendent Lewis told students and families that kids at those schools did not need to apply for a new school, which essentially means that that building is going to be open next year. Now, who's going to be running an education program, we don't know that yet.
So we have Superintendent Henderson Lewis recommending that these charters not be renewed. We have parents and students asking the school board to allow those schools to continue to operate. What happens next?
So normally what happens is the board has until their next board meeting to consider potentially overriding Lewis's recommendations. That has not happened in the past, to my knowledge. But John Brown, who's the president of the Orleans Parish School Board, last night told families that he would put this on the agenda for next month. Now, does that mean they're actually going to get the 5 votes to change the decision? We don't know about that. But he said he would put it on the agenda as an action item, and what that does mean is that the public will be able to comment on it.
So parents and students and anyone else who's interested can go to that meeting and make their statements and try and convince the board to override Mr. Lewis's recommendation.
Yeah, if that's their wish, it sounds like the board is actually going to take public comment. So that might be a first in this new world of charter renewals that we see.
Other big news this week, talking about the city budget and particularly with you, school funding. The school board decided to roll forward its entire millage, which you had reported earlier, and it was something that we expected. Tell me a bit more about how that decision was announced.
So there was a public hearing earlier this week and then a special board meeting just on the millage matter, and a lot of educators showed up and they said, really encouraged board members, like, please, this is going to be $325 extra dollars per student. Like, that's money that will be well spent in our classrooms. We'll add English language supports. We'll add enrichment activities. We can buy better curriculum, and, you know, curriculum's really expensive these days because we have to buy licenses for our books every year since everything is online. And so a lot of people showed up. I think there were about 30 speakers, and all of them except one were there to ask them to vote in favor. And it seemed like the board had heard them. At the end of the hearing, one interesting thing that happened is one of the board members, Nolan Marshall, asked Superintendent Lewis, he said, hey, you know, I'd really like to see an accounting of how these schools spend this extra money over the next year. But because Orleans Parish is an all-charter district, we don't really have the mechanisms to require that the schools report back on how they specifically use these funds. And on top of that, every charter school does a public budgeting process. So, you know, Dr. Lewis kind of, I think, was taken a little bit aback by the suggestion. And, you know, Nolan Marshall kind of asked again. And then Dr. Lewis was like, he's like, all right, I hear you loud and clear. And it was kind of this funny moment where it's not clear that, you know, that report that Mr. Marshall wants is ever going to be produced. But he certainly made his point.
Marta Jusen, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you.
Ed Quattrovo was New Orleans Inspector General for 8 years. In that role, he was in charge of cleaning up waste and corruption in city government. One of his investigations involved lead inspections conducted by the Sewerage and Water Board. Lens editor Charles Maldonado spoke to Ed Quattrovo earlier this week.
In 2016, right in the middle of your office is, you know, sort of very intense focus on the Sewerage and Water Board. Alan Miller is elected chair of the Ethics Review Board. As I believe you've mentioned, Alan Miller worked for a law firm that had a contract with the Sewerage and Water Board. Is that correct?
He was a partner.
He was a partner in a law firm. Yeah. So he certainly has financial interest in this law firm that has a contract with the Sewerage and Water Board. As this happens, you know, shortly after he is voted in chair, the Ethics Review Board votes to open a national search for a new inspector general, which is something that you objected to. At the same time, there are some other things happening or beginning to happen in the office. You say some certain elements in the office are kind of taking advantage of what's going on. And you're saying that the timeline, I'm going to quote here, the timeline suggests that the, quote, OIG's focus on the SWB may have prompted the board's decision. Beyond the timeline, do you have any specific information that you know that there was a direct relationship between your decision to focus on the Sewerage and Water Board and, you know, what this series of events that eventually led to you retiring?
No, there's no way I could know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But here's the problem. When a member of the Ethics Board, particularly its chair, creates the appearance of impropriety, whether it exists or not, is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
The image of a man under contract to the Sewerage and Water Board negatively reviewing the IG's report on the Sewerage and Water Board
mm-hmm.
is an appearance of impropriety. He gave every image in the public mind of somebody with two masters.
And I do want to add here that he did publicly criticize one of your major reports on the Sewerage and Water Board
yeah.
in an Ethics Review Board meeting, saying you were dealing in hypotheticals. Could you talk about that report? That was a pretty important report. So
that was the water quality testing report, and just to
It was the lead exposure report, I believe.
Which one? 2017.
The first report. Yeah.
Okay, that was on the reconstruction impact on the lead in the water. Now I've forgotten your first question.
I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that report. The report about sewage and waterboard construction and the potential dangers it created for lead exposure.
We issued that report in July of 17, I think, and it itself was a spinoff of a report that we were actually working on. We were working on evaluating how well the sewage and water board was testing the water.
Right.
Okay. Whether it complied with all the requirements. When we came across the information on construction, heavy infrastructure having a decided effect on the loosening of the corrosion inside the lead pipes and dropping it into the water. So we said, hey, this is more urgent. You know, let's do this. We did it. Then we went back to the water quality testing report, and just to summarize, it's what you would expect, okay? They're supposed to take a sample from a population. They had no records to determine the population.
Right.
They don't know how to take a sample. 10% of the residences tested were those of sewage and water board employees. Now, unless sewage and water board employees have grown, the workforce has grown so much that one out of every 10 people in New Orleans, or whatever it is, it's baloney. It's a polluted sample, and you can't make any inferences from it, period. And just for Lagniappe, they didn't know how to take the water out of the tap properly,
so
they were understating the results. So that was quite a report. We sent it to the Sewage and Water Board.
Now, I'm sorry, let's clarify. Are you talking about the construction report now or the water quality report?
No, I'm talking about the water quality report.
Okay, sure.
Okay. We sent it to the Sewage and Water Board for comments as part of our procedures. We got them. We had everything at that point. We had put it together and ready to go. I signed it, ready to go. But you got to wait. We had an ordinance that said 30 days from the time to get the report, and that 30 days was a couple of days after I left. The report never went out.
Right. So, and did you, so it, you sent it to the Sewage and Water Board. Had you received the management's response to the report before you left? And and the response was what? I mean, how did they respond?
The usual Cedric Grant response. Excuse me, let me retract that. The usual non-cooperative, nothing here, response that characterized the Sewage and Water Board's responses to our reports throughout my tenure.
Did you beyond those back and forth and management discussions, I guess getting back to your assertion that the Sewage and Water Board focus kind of led to all the things that happened in 2016 and 2017, beyond the back and forth and reports, were you getting pushback from then Director Cedric Grant, Mayor Mitch Landrieu, on any of this focus?
I never spoke. I spoke once to Mitch Landrieu when he was mayor-elect. I never spoke to him again. So no, there was no pushback that way. There was no pushback from the surgeon, Sewage and Water Board, other than this lawyer standing up defending his client at the Ethics Review Board meeting.
Right, when he's defending his client, this was, to clarify, this was on the first report that was released, which was the construction report.
Correct.
And he said that the report couldn't back up its conclusions, that you were dealing in hypotheticals. Is there, I'm sure you will not agree with this, but just to entertain it, is there something to him saying that unless we know there is a problem for sure with lead, that this is something that, you know, that this is something that's very sensitive, causes people to panic. Is there anything to his argument there?
None whatsoever.
Okay.
You don't solve the problem or eliminate the risk by not thinking about it.
Right.
And we've done a lot of not thinking about things in New Orleans for a very long time. I was absent for 30 some odd years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's not good.
And But to clarify, and this was one of, and I would like you to, you know,
I would like
you to explain it. I'm not defending his argument. I'm saying one of the arguments against was, well, the Inspector General's office is not actually conducting its own water testing.
Well, you don't have to test the water. Okay. You need to test it properly, and right. it's apparently never been done in New Orleans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Not for lead, mm-hmm. for copper.
That's
a ridiculous argument.
Sure.
Okay, it's ridiculous. So you're not going to do anything about it?
Right. No. Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
I mean, I don't know how many footnotes we have. 100? 150?
Mm-hmm.
We documented the science. We documented what the EPA was saying.
Mm-hmm.
We documented, we consulted with the experts on water, lead and water in the United States. Mark Phillips, EPA, right? No, he's the guy who led the Flint discovery.
Oh, the University of Virginia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were in discussion.
Mark Edwards.
So we were in discussion with all those people, and they have no doubt about it, and it's not any kind of ideological thing. It's just it's water, and our drinking water has lead in it, and New Orleans is not the only one.
Right.
Not the only one at all.
That was Lens editor Charles Maldonado and former New Orleans Inspector General Ed Quattrovo. You can hear the complete interview online at thelensnola.org. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Behind the Lens. I'm your host, Jessica Rosegard. A programming note, we will be off next week for the Thanksgiving holiday. In the meantime, please consider supporting independent journalism in New Orleans. The Lens is participating in Newsmatch, a national matching gift campaign that drives donations to nonprofit newsrooms, like us, around the country. And readers like you can play a key role in keeping our newsroom strong. From now through December 31st, Newsmatch will match every new monthly donation 12 times and double any one-time donation up to $1,000. For a nonprofit like us, this is a big deal and will help us deliver the kind of innovative journalism you've come to expect every day. This news can't wait, so why would you? Donate today at thelensnola.org/donate, and thank you for your support.